Mr. Order.
How can you stop pulling it?
I know. I remember that.
I'm paying attention, Mr. Chair. Some people don't realize you're back, but I do.
In attendance, who is that? With us today are President Bullock, Councilwoman Kilpatrick, Councilman Sheldon, Co-Chair Bell, Councilman Smalley, Councilman Cartier, Councilwoman Dillon, Councilman Redder, and my aide, Sharnice Jackson. It's your pleasure on the minute.
Motion approved.
Second.
Councilman Tag is also here. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Next item on the agenda is the update on the regional community meetings, and I don't know who's going to make that presentation, Director Bryant.
I will.
Will either make it or tell us who will.
I will make it. Chair Bryant, Director of Public Safety for Newcastle County. Let me do this first. I can cast out some flyers.
And while you're doing that, I want to recognize the President Councilman Holland.
Thank you, sir.
Price of extra zero.
Yep, it does.
Basically, we're going to be using the same format as in the past. We will open up with some welcoming for myself and someone from community governing. We'll have opening remarks from the county executive. And then we have four topics that we plan to cover within 1 hour. The first will be technology. There is some new technology within the county government, specifically our webpage and GIS mapping. We want to have some conversation about that. Strategic planning for Newcastle County and land use, followed by from the assessment group, the exempt for those over the age of 65. And the last piece will be burglaries and property crime. Apparently this time of year, as we move forward into the spring, we tend to have a lot of burglaries, a lot of thefts from our homes. So we're going to spend about 20 minutes or so on that topic. So that's the agenda. On the back side are locations and the dates. May 5th, we're going to be at the Claymont Community Center. May 8th, the Mill Creek Fire Hall. May 14th, the Abiquinic Library, and the last one will be at the Gillian Building on May 15th. The times are not listed there, but it's a 6:30 start. We will email everyone, again, this agenda and the locations. And we really asked if you can reach out to your folks in these respective areas to invite them out to these information sessions.
Any questions, comments from councilmen? Councilman Cartier.
I really think we're moving in the right direction with this in terms of, you know, a big regional meeting where I know with Brandywine 900 you're proposing a Claymont Community Center. And I like the idea of, you know, focusing the message in an hour.
Yes.
And I think that's the most effective way to retain the attention of the folks that assemble.
Yeah.
I know we kind of ran into some weather issues with the other one. I got knocked out of it, attending it when we rescheduled it at the Brandywine Town Center. But I look forward to this.
Yes.
And this kind of, you know, focused format. You know, really do a great job.
And we're going to use a number of different means again to get the word out to the residents of Newcastle County. And again, whatever help you can provide for us, we greatly appreciate it.
You can swing the lobby.
I'd like to recognize the President, Councilman Power. Any other questions, comments from council members? Questions, comments from anybody in the public?
If not, I would like to bring up our Chief of Police, Elmer Setting. We want to give you some updates and some things going on in the police department, and he'll be followed by Chief Miller, who's going to talk about some updates regarding emergency communications. Thank you.
Thank you, Director. Chief?
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Good afternoon, Colonel Elmer Setting, Chief of Police. Just wanted, at the Director's request, give you an update on a couple of areas, and they're in a particular order, but I'm going to skip the order and go right to our canine report, because I think it's important to show where we have looked backwards, used history as a reference, and made some very significant changes in the police department, in particular in the canine unit. For the first time in the history of the unit, we have a sergeant assigned to the unit. He's here today, Sergeant Brent Snyder. Thank you. Gentleman is now overseeing the training with the canine coordinator, and I'm happy to report that in the year of 2013 and year to date 2014, we have no accidental bites whatsoever, and the canine unit has continued to function at optimum levels, with safety being paramount, bringing in about $450,000 in change in seized drug money. I could go through the arrests that this unit has made. It's fairly impressive. Many of them, the dogs deployed, but because we have a focus on the recall of that dog, very rarely is anyone actually taken down by the dog physically. So out of 66 deployments in this time frame, you have five people that were actually bit, all of them being suspects and all of them being charged with various crimes. In one case in particular, the individual fled a vehicle, struck one of our officers, and ran, had money and drugs on him, but a search of the car revealed two handguns. And, you know, I have a personal belief, and I know that the director agrees with me on this, every time we take a handgun off the street, I believe we would, at the very least, avoided a shooting, if not a homicide. And I just want to take a minute to personally give kudos to Sergeant Brent Schneider and the men and women of the K-9 unit at present. I'll answer any questions in regards to K-9.
For Chief, I'd like to start by, number one, thanking you for the update. Number two, I had, you were well aware, some concerns about the operation of the K-9 unit, concerns about some accidental bites, but I think one of the first things we did was move forward and change the policy. It appears from your report that as implemented, it's working, and nobody expects, in my opinion, for it to be perfect. If there's nothing is perfect. By the same token, one of the things I think you didn't mention we ought to include the fact that they've been used in searches for people, and in fact have saved lives. At least I'm aware of that. So
one of which was a juvenile in a snowstorm and sub-zero temperatures. I just, you know, it's easy to capture all that. It's an extensive report. I just thought it was just as important to point out the fact that by correcting that training, sir, we've had zero incidents.
Well, and that's very, very important. And I want to commend you for the outstanding work. Certainly, the being used for a designated purpose in terms of saving lives. And obviously, the handguns off the street. Every once in a while, you got to use them to capture somebody, you understand? So, any comments, questions from the council members? Councilman Powell.
I just, having used working dogs, I know what I can do with my dogs, probably what it would take 10 people to do. Whatever they're trained at is probably about the same thing. You know, that you would really be surprised what a dog can do if it's broke right.
Any other questions, comments? Councilman. Questions, comments? Seeing none.
The next update, sir, is everyone is well aware of our TAPS program, which has an analytical focus on quality of life crime. But when you step back and look at the bigger picture, Delaware is number four in the nation for property crime based on per capita. We are not doing a very good job with it, even though our department is above the national standard for solving burglaries. know, me and my team took a step back, and we're trying to figure out how we can do something better about property crime. And at first glance, the first thing you realize is, after you leave the police academy, that basic training in burglary is really what you get, and you're kind of almost stuck with. And when you go into detectives, you have almost extensive training in everything from how to do a neighborhood canvas to fingerprinting. And we knew we couldn't take any additional bodies off the street. That's the old way of doing things, is to pull the resource and, you know, design a different unit. This time we left the resources in the patrol division. We gave four officers on each platoon designators as property crime specialists. We gave them additional training. We have a weekly meeting where they are directly in contact with the detectives in our property crime unit. And in the short time that we've been doing this, since the onset of this year, we are seeing a 47% decrease in burglaries in Newcastle County. When we were holding around about a 27% decrease based on TAPS, this property crime initiative has yielded another 20+% putting us at 47%. I hate to, a lot of times I get the question if weather is a factor. Well, we're basing it on the same time last year. We had weather last year when I checked. So we have weather this year, and we still have a 47% decrease, and I think you're going to see that continue. I think the property crime initiative is really going to spur along some of the other programs in the agency, and it's going to bring overall crime down an additional percentage. And just as a point of information, we have been beating the drum about heroin. All this property crime is driven by the heroin trade. I repeat, we have a heroin epidemic. No one really seems to get that. Even our local media is not very interested in reporting property crime. Our failures or successes with it, and the fact that it is directly connected to the heroin trade in Delaware, which is extensive. The last update, sir, is the fleet.
Keith, before you go there, I want to make a comment on that. I'm aware of political process and some elected officials moving forward to do what they can to proceed to make marijuana legal. And I don't know how that's going to come out, but I am going to constantly remind them for over 90% of heroin addicts in the nation, over 90% of the cocaine crack addicts in the nation, the initial drug of choice was marijuana. So, you know, you'll have folks who come forward and give you all the reasons why we should legalize marijuana, but I'm going to constantly remind folks as they take their positions that this is the initial drug of choice leading to the problem that we have that we're confronted with right now. And then, you know, we've been lucky so far. We haven't had a lot of bare heroin on the street that has ended up in deaths like we had several years ago. But it's only a matter of time before somebody starts lacing something because of the continued presence, the increased presence. So I couldn't let that go without getting my legs in from the beginning, because I know the folks are coming through, and I think they're coming through in conditions.
Going to send this map around in regards to the heroin. This is year to date. So when you look at this map, where you see the handcuffs, you see that's representing a heroin arrest. Where you see a hypodermic needle, it's a heroin overdose, more than likely a save by our medics with Narcan. And when you see the red skull and bones, that's a heroin death, one of which the gentleman was out of prison for about 48 hours. Got his hands on heroin and died in a, you know, middle income neighborhood in a middle income home, and was dead 48 hours he was released from prison. Feel free to have a look at that if we don't think you have a heroin problem in Delaware. Councilman Carter.
The chairman made comments about you know, the way people end up using, you know, these different illegal substances and drugs. I wonder if the chief could comment, because I do, when I meet my public, talk about the heroin problem in this county. And I wonder if you could comment on the relationship between prescribed opiate-type painkillers and illegal heroin. You know, we talk about gateways and how, is there a relationship there maybe you could comment about?
The national studies are indicating that many, many people that have switched over to heroin have done so because of a local, state, and federal crackdown on what's called pill mills. So when they couldn't get their hands on that type of drug, oxycodone and others of that nature, the cheapest and easiest and effective way to switch was just to switch to heroin, which is why you see such a huge increase in heroin. The pills, when you have a federal level, a state level, and a local level cracking down on a particular drug, in this case, the pills, people switch to what's easier, and that's what's easy. And that's how we ended up with the heroin. Absolutely. Well, the heroin alert program, you know, the director just reminded me to plug that. I forget, and it's such a great program because the real truth to how we're going to stop heroin is education. You're not going to stop the people that are using right now. That's not so simple. But we can educate our youth about how addictive and how dangerous this drug is. We send that program all throughout Delaware. That's not isolated to New Castle County. The director was just briefing me today that we have her going into New Jersey, anywhere that, and anyone that's willing to listen about what's really happening with heroin. And that's a very sobering program that more or less scares kids straight. I'm not saying it's the you know, silver bullet, but it certainly gives them the real picture of heroin. As you know, the stigmatism of shooting heroin with a needle is gone. The heroin is at 70, 80, and 90% purity. So all you do is snuff it up your nose. And that's why it's crossing over so many different borders.
Before I go to Councilman Powers and then Councilman Holland, you know, I would just say that number one, if folks don't understand the heroin problem, look at this map. And number two, you have to go any further than the methadone clinics. And one of which is in my council district, and look at folks lined up before they're open, and the lines all the way around the block. And those are the folks who are in treatment. So it's a major problem, and folks need to understand the severity of it and how it impacts the quality of life. You know, and the folks who live around the clinic stay upset because of the high volume of people that are there. So it's an ongoing challenge. I'll go to Councilman Powers.
Well, looking at your map, there's nothing south of the canal.
I'm sorry, sir.
There's nothing south of the canal.
What I'm
seeing is there's only one in my district.
I don't like heroin.
That would be north of the canal. I'm just asking, you know, what are the numbers south of the canal?
I'm sure we have. I thought the map was.
That's not a whole.
There's a larger scale version of the map.
You got about half.
We can probably give that to you. That there's two different ones. One includes the lower half. There's not as many affected below, but I have a map that's about this big that includes your.
The little bit I have north has one spot, but most. That's the other half of the county isn't showing it.
No, we do have a map for that, sir.
Councilman Howell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chief, you mentioned the use of Narcan by our paramedics. Is it permissible in Delaware for police officers to administer Narcan in some jurisdictions?
Something that just was put out by the White House. The Attorney General, National Attorney General, is recommending all police officers be equipped with it. We at present are not equipped with Narcan. Our medics are. Huge success rate with that drug. Shuts down the opiate receivers and then stops the effect of the heroin so that we don't lose as many people as you would. But I have not done the research into what it's going to take to give a police officer Narcan, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I just noticed that some jurisdictions, police officers actually administer the drug, and it seems to me it's a form
in an aerosol spray. It's something I'd like to look into.
Yeah, I want to ask this. We're on it now. Is there an adverse effect to administering Narcan if an individual, if it's not heroin, that they're
figures coming back around on the report.
Larry Tan, Chief of Emergency Medical Services. Narcan is a, it's a narcotic antagonist. What it does is it blocks the receptor site, blocks the areas that heroin and narcotics would occupy to produce an effect. So by blocking it, it eliminates the actual respiratory depression, which is the big effect that, that an opiate or narcotic would produce. It is, there are some side effects, but it's relatively minor, if indeed it's not an actual heroin overdose. In answer to Councilman Collins' question, the Division of Public Health is the organization that would examine whether they would authorize other entities to actually administer medication. And just this week, they've started a pilot program in the city of Wilmington that has the contracted private ambulance provider, the St. Francis Hospital, able to administer, nasally administer Narcan as a pilot project. So they're going to be looking at how well, how often it's utilized and whether it's effective or not. So it's starting to expand out a little bit. They're taking a look at it. There are some effects on people that are actually having an opioid overdose where you can actually put them into withdrawal. The other is that they have a tendency not to be too happy when you ruin the high. So we've had cases where paramedics have administered Narcan and the person comes up fighting because they're very agitated and unhappy.
You need to give them a refund.
We don't know if you refund since we don't bill, but we do actually, the medics will start to administer Narcan in smaller doses to make sure that they're breathing, which is the biggest risk factor, and keep them somewhat sedated as we finish the transplant to reduce the risk of surviving.
I would never ask, but recently I became aware that there's an outstanding drug out there that if administered to a certain type of stroke victim within 3 hours, has a great, great effect of preventing debilitation and fusion. But within that 3 hours, they also have to get a CAT scan to determine that's the type of stroke, otherwise it can lead to death. Which is, so that's the only reason. I mean, so now I just question, okay, what's the adverse effect if we're going to have someone else administer, not under the, you know, the guidelines or whatever the protocol that the paramedic is taking.
I mean, with any medication that you administer, there's always side effects. And I know we're kind of getting off the topic.
No, and I didn't mean to, but it saves their life.
It's,
you know,
it's minimal. Risk
of course,
benefit,
yeah. We'll probably get sued for saving somebody. I'm sure that'll happen.
I've saw Director Brian had his hand up. You have comments?
So just, I want to pose a question to Larry with regards to response time. As relates to Narcan, I know we did a report just recently about our response time and the use of Narcan, specifically in the city of Wilmington. Can you give us an idea of the number of saves that you made?
I do not have the numbers on the number of times that we've administered Narcan. I have to go back and We have done, there are certain advanced skills that basic life support ambulance services have been authorized for several years to provide. And on a statewide basis, one of the things that we're finding is that there are limited numbers of occasions where those teams are actually using those skills because of the response time for the paramedics. That typically the paramedics arrive on scene in a short period of time, and the paramedics are going to do it rather than the fire company ambulance crew. So one of the things you look at when you look at, okay, let's deploy an additional medication at the police officer level, is are we waiting long times for EMS to arrive? Are they going to be able to use it? Because there is a shelf life for the meds. Any medication, as you've heard before, has a temperature range for storage. So you have to look at those logistics as well. But one of the things we see on a statewide basis is the paramedic system statewide responds on a fast enough basis that the fire company and basic life support ambulances typically don't get into doing a lot of the advanced skills that they've been taught.
Any other questions, comments? Council member?
Yes.
Councilman Tad.
Just one. Chief, by any chance, are you able to, and this is one thing that I go around and I tell the communities when I touch on the epidemic of heroin, but what I try to convey to them is, and I'm not sure if there's any way to get us that information in these little yellow dots, but about when we do a bust on heroin or we do one of the press releases, we're talking about 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 900 bags of heroin. We're not just talking about catching somebody with a bag or two on them.
In some cases, it's you know, logs of hair.
Right.
The drug unit just did several undercover hits, that, you know, warrants at residents, and we took logs of hair.
Right. Now, is there any way
we
to get
do
some
news
of that?
Releases? We do news releases on everything. We're being told
at present
that it's not newsworthy by the local paper.
Are we able to get some of that data on like the numbers of bags that we're hitting on each of these? Because somebody could look at it and say, oh, well, you caught somebody with a bag or two bags, when in actuality it's probably 300, 400, 500 bags.
Unless there is a confidential piece of information that we have to hold back for the purpose of an investigation come to fruition, we release every drug arrest and the amounts. It's daily. It's daily. Every gun, every drug arrest, and it's every day. It's heroin, heroin, heroin.
Well, Chief, I certainly have been and do read the news releases, and for those of us who do look at them and read them, the fact of the matter is, between seized drugs, seized guns, and solid burglaries, we're a very busy department, and this conversation is quite relevant because of just the daily occurrence of those things that you're obviously, the department, I think, is doing a good job in communicating, at least through releases and through the emails that I sent.
Copies.
We'll continue on.
Thank you, sir.
Any other comments, questions from council members?
I don't know if you have any working knowledge of this, but what is Delaware State Police encountering? Are they encountering also a lot of heroin, you know, busts, essentially?
I don't have exact numbers, Councilman, but I mean, obviously they're out there doing their drug interdiction stops on the major roadways, which they're responsible for based on the jurisdictional agreement. And you know, in the conversations that I do have where we talk about what agencies are facing what, yes, they're seeing, you know, very, very similar issues, and so is Dover, and so is lower Delaware.
Hey, what?
Lower Delaware.
What about lower Delaware? Sorry.
Same issues.
Lower.
Any other questions?
Well, that's what I was, I'm just, you know, technically you left my district out.
I mean, the map, you
only got half the county.
I actually do have a much bigger version of that map that I'm going to personally bring to you.
But if we don't have a heroin problem, then let's put it out there.
No, you have a meth
problem. I think what it is we got
in case you're wondering, that's what's down there. That's methamphetamine.
Well, it's in Bill's district.
Yes.
Yeah. You're not,
it's
you're
a different map.
There you go.
Part of it is probably the effects that happen down there. To bring it up here.
Co-Chairman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First and foremost, welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
Pleasure to serve with you again. I just wanted to mention something why Colonel Setting is sitting here at the head of the table with us. And as we all know, we recently got an email from a citizen that was questioning the integrity of the process of a complaint that this individual made with the County Police Department. And I did not get into any kind of an email frenzy. But what I want to mention today, this particular individual was asking all of us to contact Colonel Setting and to ask that this internal investigation be done properly, with integrity. And I think I speak, you know, there's 13 of us here. I don't think anyone on this council questions the integrity, especially we see daily within our police department, and in particular with our staff in command. When a complaint does come into the county police, it is assigned and professional standards, the unit, once called in affairs, it's thoroughly reviewed and vetted. And, you know, if we have a citizen that contacts us or makes a complaint about our police department, I'll often recommend that they contact the county police or I'll have someone contact them. But just from a council standpoint, to have an individual want us to not only question the integrity of investigations going on with this person's complaint, but the point is that there is a process. It's a very formal process. It's done at the highest level professionally. In most cases, we'll never hear or know the results, nor should we, because some of those results could involve individual officers or a complaint or their, whether there's discipline or whether there's not discipline. But I can tell you my experience in dealing with our staff and command of our county police department, that the complaints that are often received, while they're thoroughly vetted, reviewed by the department, very few that turn that to I just wanted to mention it because I didn't see anyone respond back to this complaint. I don't intend to, and like I say, I think that, that we have the highest regard for our county police and our leadership.
Yes, sir.
I
I'm going to tell you my life. My job is to coach up on the station, investigate the process, come on, we investigate it. I know in my experience, there are a lot of complaints. So I go out of power complaints to go to. And I haven't met anybody that went to file complaints in the Internal Affairs, or the public safety, they're closing and sending out complaints. I didn't dignify that with response, and if you get similar complaints in the future, my intention is not to dignify. I'm not going to be accused in any way, shape, form, or fashion of interfering in the investigative process. So much so to this case that I had a family member call me and said, well, you're supposed to have to take up the U.S. press, but it's where you call. So I'm going to stay in my lane and encourage others to do the same.
Respectfully, sir, just as a point of information, the councilman's right. We won't release the findings of that investigation. However, everyone in council should know that that investigation has been assigned to the chief of detectives. So if anyone wants to question as to if we're taking it seriously or not, the major has oversight over the captain, and I have oversight over the major. We will not tolerate any halfway done investigation and the accusations from an officer that's been removed from the force. I'm not suggesting they're sour grapes. I'm saying no matter what, it's a tough situation for him, for us, for an officer to be removed from the police department. But it is what it is. He's made an accusation. We are doing our due diligence.
Anything further from council members? Anything from the public on current agenda items? With that, we'll move to the next agenda item, which is Emergency Communications Division update on the status of the Smart 911 Center.
Good afternoon, Council. Jeff Miller, Chief of Communications.
Welcome.
It's a pleasure to sit here and update you today on where we are with our Smart 911 initiative. I'll start with that first. Currently today, we know that we have 2,100 registered public safety profiles out there. Maybe not as aggressive a number as I had hoped it to be in the first 7 to 9 months, but I would reflect that the Delaware911.org program has been in business for almost 6 years with 4,000 registered users. So we're at that halfway mark at the present moment. I certainly thank you for the initiative that you put forward, and we plan by the end of this week to provide each one of the members of council with a media packet that is approved to be distributed by Smart 911 with the communications logo on it. And then you can share that. It can be in banners, it can be on business cards, it can be sent to any one of your associations that you represent to be placed on your website. In addition to that, we're also putting a work group of our employees together to look at other innovative initiatives. Spread the word about Smart 911 in commercial, in county, in the county, free. So that's where we are today with Smart 911. Move on to the next. Career development, as you know, in this fiscal year, we were authorized 8 additional positions. I'm proud to tell you that as of yesterday, we have filled every one of those call operator positions. We have 6 people that will be in training starting next week to get protocol training. But again, along with Smart 911, our 911 center is the first in the state of Delaware to introduce using police protocol. So we've always used, or we have used for the past 15 years, medical protocol. When people call for a medical situation, we use a nationally recognized standardization of questioning. We transition to the fire side for fire phone calls with that same type of product about 5 years ago, and we just launched in November our card set version of the police protocol. We will be transitioning to a software version of that as well. So with that said, it will lead me into some of where we are with career development and what was highlighted here as redesign of the 911 center. Redesign meaning the way we do business. Councilman Tackett asked me today, a constituent asked him, they had called 911 for a child who was in a seizure and that they believed that they had been told that they were being placed on hold. We try not to use the word hold. We say, please stay on the line, we'll connect you with a medical dispatcher. While we connect them from the 911 call operator to the fire medical section of dispatch. Now with our new hirees on, and as soon as we get through the summertime, I'm sorry, in the beginning of the summer, we're going to implement a power shift. We're going to focus our 8 new positions on the 12 busiest hours of the day so that we can get our phone calls answered faster during the time that the data shows us when we're busy. With that said as well, we're going to have a one-stop shop for 911, and we anticipate starting that in September. So after our call operators get used to using the police protocol, we will introduce them with the medical protocol. We will then introduce them with the fire protocol, and hopefully by September they will be taking all calls from start to finish. So there won't be this perceived delay of transfer being placed on hold. If you call and say, my child's not breathing, they will immediately put the incident into the CAD, it will be sent to dispatch, and then that call operator will provide that citizen with pre-arrival instructions, reducing those few extra seconds it may take to transfer the call. Another benefit to that is it frees up about 12 more people in the room who, although are dispatchers and have other responsibilities, it will actually give us surge protection so that when we do get the anomalies on the interstate, the car fires to generate 40 phone calls at one time, the other dispatchers will be able to jump into the 911 because they'll all be certified, they are all currently certified in all 3 protocols. So anyone in the room would be able to take a 911 call, process it, whether it's fire, medical, or police, get the queue cleared out for 911, and start taking phone calls in a regular basis. So that takes us through our first 3 there for our current status of career development and a 911 center redesign, if there's any questions there.
Questions, comments from council members?
And the last one, our recruitment initiatives. We're working with HR. We have a committee put together that will represent us in public forum, specifically starting with the job fair on the 26th at the Garfield Powell. That's one of our recruitment initiatives, to be more exposed in the public when the county or police or EMS is doing recruitment as well. Another thing that we've tried this year, when the school year started, is with the Delaware Public Safety and Security Academy. They are conducting a telecommunicators course throughout the senior year, and we've provided two of our people who are trained in delivering that course along the way for the past 2 months to assist them in getting people certified so that when they graduate, they'll have certification in a 40-hour telecommunicators course and be able to apply and, you know, hopefully have some experience as well when they put that on their application. Another initiative that we're looking, we just met with the director from PAL, Garfield PAL, the other day. One thing we would like to develop is a week-long program in the PAL, specifically targeting students for the week-long program to offer certification. So we're trying to look at some funding sources for that, but we think that we can put our communicators in the classroom for 1 or 2 weeks out of the summer and get two classes out of there where people will be certified. And then if we change our hiring practice so that we allow applications to be accepted more often than a 10-day window once a year, they'll be able to walk out of there with a certificate in their hand, certified to do a job, and apply for one of our jobs when an opening becomes available.
Dr. Small.
You're talking about students who graduated or will be graduating or whatever.
For the Public Safety Academy or the PAL?
What you're talking about with the academy?
The Public Safety Academy would be, they have students, they're offering the course to their students senior year.
Yeah, so what I was wondering is whether we're going to do a week-long, because you were looking at a week-long thing at PAL, whether we would be outreaching to the schools to see if they would offer them credits as well.
Sure.
With what they're doing.
That's a good point.
Thank you.
You
get a
whole
lot of history.
Councilman Howell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. During our earlier meeting, we talked about a $500,000 grant that's going to be designated to go to the PAL Center. So it seems to me there's a connection. You mentioned the need for funding for certification. So I'm just trying to make a connection here.
Well, this would be a great outreach opportunity. It's only going to cost the communications division the salary of the people we're putting in there for the week, you know, as they take turns. And that's part of their career development, to be part of a work group as well. And then all we're looking at is the instruction materials at about $50 a student. So it's not a big investment.
Should be a good fit.
Any other questions, concerns, comments? Co-chairman?
Keep up the great work.
We try.
Director Bryan.
Director Bryan again. We have done, with the help of the folks around this table and our county executive, I think this Department of Public Safety has done an outstanding job this past year on every front. We're not waiting for things to happen. We're proactively going after and trying so desperately to deal with issues that are out there in our communities. I have to applaud my chiefs because they have done a yeoman's job in just leading the force. And then the workers, some of which are here today, they have so much energy and drive. And they work extremely hard for us. So I am very proud of what we've done this past year as an organization. And the next time we come before you in a committee meeting, we will do two things. We will give you an overview of the TAPS program from 2012 to 13. And I assure you, once you see all the numbers and hear all the information coming from the chief of police and others, you'll be impressed. And then we'll follow up with an update on our academy, our paramedic academy. They are in their third or fourth week. Is that three or four?
Three.
And we will present next at our next council or committee meeting the status of both of those projects right now. But in both cases, they're going extremely well. And again, as a director, I'm extremely proud of the men and women of the Department of Public Safety. And again, thank you for your assistance along with the county executive and his staff. Thank you.
Mr. Director.
Sir.
I trust that you realize
your opinion is very biased.
Biased?
Yes.
It's like a father and a mother. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Having said that, I do want to say that I agree with you 100%. I appreciate your leadership, and I think we're doing some things as a government that will be something for other jurisdictions to look at, study, and benefit from. So I want to commend you for success to date, and as I said in previous council meetings, some of the things that have begun to come to fruition, I frankly did not think I would see come to fruition while I was in office. So keep up the good work, and we'll continue to be as supportive as we can, and looking forward to working with you.
Good. But just one last thing. We got published. The Division of Police got published in the International Association of Chiefs of Police. It's online. And it's not an easy task to get in that publication. And that's, again, due to the hard work of these police officers that we have working for us. So, again, we're proud of what we're doing, and we will do our very best to keep it up.
Mr. Director, we've gotten some new cars with some new colors and some new styles. Can we have a little conversation about that at some point in time?
Yes.
Actually, sir, it was part of my presentation, but we got off track, and I didn't want to cut into Chief Miller's time. The new fleet, the aging fleet is being replaced. It's been a problem for some time. We went out and purchased the Tahoes. There were originally some concerns in regards to Ford not making the Crown Victoria any longer and what we were going to use. The Tahoe is a very fitting vehicle in the patrol division. It uses equal to or less gas than a Crown Victoria, depending if it's the two- or four-wheel drive model. We no longer scurry around looking for 4x4 vehicles when the weather comes in, which seems to be coming more frequently. And the inside unit vehicles have been replaced with the Ford Taurus all-wheel drive, which have gotten rave reviews on as for weather and fuel economy. So we are slowly but surely replacing the fleet. It's going to take years to do it, but we were behind the eight ball when we started. But this first influx of vehicles has made a huge difference. And we're also getting very, very positive reviews from citizens and police officers alike about the color schematic and the striping package on the vehicles.
Well, I just wanted you all to know that I'm not thinking to switch, and I trust that those Tahoes can still do what supposedly the Crowns could do if necessary in a pursuit, because they don't look like they can do that.
We rarely pursue, but the pursuit-rated Tahoe, actually on the EVOC course in Dover with the Delaware State Police, it outperforms the Crown Victoria. And next year, we don't have to choose between a 4x4 and a pursuit-rated model. Chevy is getting back into the police car business in a big way, and next year the Tahoe will be 4x4 pursuit-rated. And we're looking forward to the next purchase because, again, you, from time to time, you do need a performance vehicle. But as the director pointed out, our pursuit policy almost never allows you to pursue unless there's a real reason.
Especially as we reduce the million miles away to a million miles an hour scenario.
We're trying to move away from that too, sir.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chief. We're on the subject of other. Does anybody have any other things they would like to bring before the Public Safety Committee today? Not seeing or hearing any, is there a motion?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Meeting adjourned.
Okay, 10 more minutes.
Bill said which one?
Oh, which community service? Yeah, because that's what I want to do.
No, go ahead.